haven't signed in, there's a sheet at the beginning, or at the entry over there, please sign in, and have your email address or your contact information if you'd like to keep track of that. In front of you, you have a form that we encourage you to fill out and hand in on the way out at the end. It's a feedback form on what you're hearing today. So, while other people are trickling, I'll just introduce myself and this gentleman here to my left. My name is Phil Hofstetter. I'm the administrator at Petersburg Medical Center. And does everyone know why we're here today? So, we want to know what we're going to do with this aging facility, right? So, that's what we're here to talk about. The man to my left here, his name is Dan Jardine, and he's an architect with a firm called NEC. And we were fortunate enough about 8 months ago or so, maybe even a little bit more, we were fortunate enough at the hospital to obtain funding from the Denali Commission. And with that funding, we were able to look at our facility and do something called a master plan. In that master plan, we asked Dan and his group and his team to summarize what that master plan is and present that to us. Now, the purpose of today's meeting is not, and I'll repeat this because you will have sticker shock on this, trust me, is not to talk about or vote on or ask for funding from the taxpayer to pay for a facility. That is not the approach that we would want to take. What I'd like you to hear about is the master plan is designed to look at all the existing work that's been done in the past, present it in an organized fashion, and really look at what we should do, what we can do based on the services in the space, based on the services that we have, provide a space program. With that funding, we're able to look at debt capacity, seismic and engineering, and space programming, and Dan will talk about that in some level of detail. And we will what we want to do is at the end is we'll want to hold our questions till the end. I mean, if something's really burning, that's okay. But we'd like to hold our questions till the end and provide some feedback opportunities as well. All right. Well, without further ado, I will pass. Well, you have your own mic.
I do.
Okay.
Thanks, Phil. Yeah. Just a quick, maybe a little more detail of my firm and my background. I've been doing healthcare design for 35 years now. My firm, NAC, has been around for 60 years, and we have offices in Seattle, Spokane, and LA. And all of our focus is on healthcare and education. And so we have quite a bit of work in the field. And I think it's one of the reasons we actually won the commission for this. So I'm going to run through the slideshow. There's some pretty pictures, there's some details, and I'll try to fill in some more information on that. And just go through what's involved in the master plan process. So just to kind of ground all this in the context. The purpose of the master plan is really to figure out how the hospital can stay a viable partner and provide the best possible health care for this community.
That's always
the ground point that we go back to as we go through and look at this. Hopefully this is better. So when we got the contract, there are some specific tasks that we needed to address. And they're listed here. One was to do a structural analysis of the existing facility. There was a previous facility assessment report that was done that really looked hard at the condition of the mechanical, electrical, and plumbing, and so on. But they didn't really get into the structural. They mentioned that this should be looked at further. So we looked at that. There was a big question about whether or not a site in downtown or up the hill closer to the airport might make a difference in terms of tsunamis and so on. So we took a look at that. We hired Navigant, which is a national healthcare analysis firm with a specialty in market analysis and finances. And we brought them on board to look at the region, look at the market here, and also take a close look at the hospital's finances to get a better idea of what is possible here in the community. From all the information, the architect jumps in and creates a numeric space program. And essentially what that is you figure out all the rooms you need to provide the services, and you think about what size they should be. Then you add all that up, and you come up with a size for a hospital facility. And then when you take that information, you start doing block diagrams to see how all those different departments might fit on candidate sites around town. And then finally, when you have all that done, you have enough information where you can start doing cost estimates in a very high level of fashion based on square footage, what typical hospital construction costs are, and how the site may need to be developed. So that was the process that these were all the tasks that we had to address. And we didn't do this in the vacuum. We spent a lot of work done by the hospital in the past. A lot of reports have been delivered to the hospital, and a lot of outreach into the community has been documented in terms of what kind of services people want to see here. We also took a look at the borough comprehensive plan to get a lot of information about the region and the infrastructure here in the area. And a very extensive document, the Community Needs Assessment in 2018, has a lot of good information in it. So we researched all of this in preparation for embarking on this master plan process. So going back and kind of a quick overview of what we found in the structural seismic analysis, we did go into the building, examined all the drawings, did some physical investigation, and found several points where the building is at seismic risk. Now, structural engineering, seismic theory, advances based on analysis of events. When there are big seismic events, all the structural engineers analyze that, see how buildings perform, and then the actual design process for structure evolves based on that. So the building, when it was designed and built, met all the current codes at that time. But there's been 30 years of analyzed events since then. And we found several points in the shear walls, diaphragm connections, and also connections to the foundation that were not up to current theory and current code. And for the inundation study, looking at the potential for sea level rise, the potential for tsunami damage in Petersburg, after going through that, the bottom line is that sea level rise is not going to be an issue in the near term, which is centuries. With the configuration around here, ocean-generated tsunamis and glacial collapse tsunamis are not going to be a risk just because of the way we're tucked back in here in the channel. Most of those events will dissipate long before they reach Petersburg. The one risk is that if there's a monumental collapse of Petersburg Mountain, that will basically wipe out everything if that happens. So it really doesn't make any difference if you build right next to the water or if you build right next to the airport. So that particular factor in making decisions doesn't really have weight. And as I mentioned, Navigant did the analysis, the finances, the market, and so on. And this gets kind of busy, but I'll walk us through it. They did a market assessment of the Petersburg service area, showing a slow population increase, but an increase in the number of people 65 plus is expected in the area. Inpatient use rates are projected to grow very little, if at all. Outpatient volume will increase slightly more than inpatient volume. And there's really no direct competition for primary care, urgent care, ER care, or inpatient services. But there are direct competitors or potential collaborators for chronic care management, post-acute care. These include Randall, Ketchikan, Juno, and Seattle with Virginia Mason and Swedish. The lab and imaging services are expected to grow significantly, and most of the imaging and diagnostic volume will increase, but MRIs, demand for MRIs is expected to decrease. And finally, the percent of Medicare patients is expected to grow. Kind of goes along with the increase in age. And the number of private insured is expected to decrease slightly over the next 10 years. Is that a surprise to anybody? I don't think so. So we also looked at the internal operations of the hospital. So general medicine, gastroenterology, behavioral health, and cardiac services all represent the highest demand inpatient services. Gastroenterology again, nephrology, substance abuse, and pulmonology, they represent the largest percentage of inpatient volume for overnight care and extended care. CT, physical therapy, home health, and visits to the treatment room all have shown significant growth in the past few years. The majority of inpatient days or patient days at Petersburg Medical Center are the long-term care patients. So, looking at all of that and starting to forecast where the needs are, we determined that the existing 12 acute beds are really more than adequate for the demand. There is a current average daily census in the long-term care unit of 13.5 of the 15 beds, so that's suggesting that there is, it's pretty much at capacity. So there is justification for adding long-term care beds. You know, and coupled with just there's a low number of these beds in Alaska, so you may see people coming from other areas to come here for that. So we came up with the forecast of up to 20 beds as a viable expansion for the long-term care unit. And then the ancillary services, we figured out that we could get by with a single room for each of these services, that they're all necessary and viable services, but you don't really need to have more than one of each of these. So looking at the finances, and this was all getting to analysis of what the potential debt burden is for the hospital. And this is all financial things, but whenever you forecast your debt burden, you make a lot of assumptions. So these are some of those assumptions. So it was, starting point was the fiscal year 1920 budget, which was based on the prior year, 1919. The budget was assumed to be a break-even for the hospital, which it's been operating at recently. We looked at how the interest payments would affect the operating income and margin. In other words, what would that debt burden, how would that affect the operating hospital? And we assumed that whatever capital project we do would be entirely funded with debt over a 30-year term at 5.5% interest. The model assumed no additional debt added to the hospital. And we assumed that the day's cash on hand over the operational hospital in the future would remain on a positive trajectory. So these are all the assumptions that were made during this analysis. And what we came up with, as the hospital sits today with no further improvements, the hospital could support a debt capacity of $5 million for a capital project, which is not a lot. So getting back to the services, out of the Navigant analysis, and then also going back to the outreach community, the services that the community expressed they would like to see in town, looking at the services that we felt were viable financially. These are the ones we came up with as sort of priority for putting together the Numeric program. And I'm not going to read all these, but I think if you look over this list, these are all things that are of value to the community, and we feel that we can actually provide without losing money, you know, at least at a break-even point. So we took all of those different departments and started sizing the rooms and pouring them together to get up this total square footage for the hospital. But there were also some standards and sort of industry guidelines that we used for sizing key rooms. And one of those key rooms, of course, is a patient room. And as you look at this diagram, this represents what the current thinking is for patient rooms. You have it divided up into three zones. There's the clinical zone at the entry for the physicians to come in with a sink right at the entry so they can wash their hands coming in and wash their hands going out. They have this side of the bed with the electronic medical record input point right next to the bed. We have the patient zone here with access to entertainment, but also all of the services for the patient. And then we have the family zone on the outboard side. It's increasingly recognized that the family participates in the healing process. The healing process actually works much faster. We put the toilet room with the door as close as possible to the bed, so at the shortest walking distance between the bed and the toilet, so it reduces falls. So these rooms like this range in size from 350 to 400 square feet. We use 350 square feet in our program for each of the patient rooms. Likewise for the clinic, current thinking about clinical exam rooms. You want to have, you want to have room for family members to come in with the patient, to be there, and they're speaking with the doctor at times to make sure that the information is transferred efficiently. We have a zone here for the physician and the computer to do the electronic medical record and also display images from x-ray and so on. Set up so that the patient can see it from the exam table and also from the table. And again, we have the services here, the hand wash sink. The door opening up provides some privacy if you're on the table. Exam rooms now are typically about 120 square feet. So we used that 120 square foot when we did the Numeric program and pulled all of that together. So this is what we ended up with for the total program. It's organized by department, as you can see. On the left here, this is the existing hospital. Existing hospital is about 49,000 square feet. And what we came up with for the program for the new hospital is 79,500 square feet. Again, more services are being provided. The rooms are larger. Clearances demand more technology and equipment, requires more space, so it tends to push the size up a little bit higher than what you have now. Plus, we are increasing the number of long-term care beds, so that's adding square footage as well. And I circled a few things here, just to kind of point that out. The long-term care, the existing 6,000 square feet, we're doubling that to 12,000 square feet. The clinic, 5,300 square feet. We're up to 9,000 square feet for additional exam rooms, additional treatment rooms, and additional space to support the therapies. And down to physical therapy, we're at 1,250 square feet now. We're expanding that to 3,300 square feet. Physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy, wound care, all of those are all tied into wellness, early prevention, and so on, and of course rehab. So, the available sites. And I'll emphasize we have not chosen a site yet, but these were the sites that remain available to us as part of the master plan study to look at. We have, of course, the downtown site where the existing hospital is, which is on the left side. And we took the adjacent block to the right to think about getting enough room to do the hospital if we do it downtown. We have these sites out here on Hagen on either side. Orientation, this is the fire hall here. And then these two other sites at Excel Street and North 8th are all sites that were identified as potential. So we started looking at doing block diagrams on the site. We focused on the North Hagen site just to pick one and to look at laying out the hospital on. It doesn't mean we selected that or had a great fondness for it. We just wanted to pick one and work with it and see. As we go through towards the process of selecting a site, we'll be looking at each of these sites with selection criteria and trying to look at each one in terms of these different items. And if you look at, access to utilities, some of these sites have utilities that are right out the road that they're adjacent to. Others, you have to go chase them down hundreds of feet away, which is an additional expense. Proximity to roads, can we come off an already existing road, or are we going to have to develop additional roads to service that site? Elevation, Muscade, risk. Has anybody heard of what Muscade is? We've learned a lot about that. Proximity to residential, we don't want that. We want to stay away from any adjacent residential properties just because of the impact of the construction. Zoning designations, any existing uses that are displaced. So this is a first pass at a score in that, very subjective on my part, as we actually move forward and get closer to making a site selection, we will of course engage the community and the hospital in that analysis as well. So, we looked at two greenfield schemes and then one scheme downtown on the existing site. So this one is on the North Hagen site, and we have the clinic here off in the corner. We have the ancillary services, imaging, lab, surgery, central sterile, and so on, physical therapy in the middle, and then we have the acute care wing and the long-term care wing kind of looking out over a garden. Parking for the public and parking for staff. We have the hospital service area back here with the loading dock, receiving, storage, and so on. A scheme like this provides a lot of daylight for the patient rooms. A fairly simple scheme. The main entry is here. You come in, go right to the clinic. You're there for a primary care doctor visit, or you can go down the hall and get an x-ray or do a lab. And if you visit people over in the acute care wing get down the hallway. Now, the hospital is closed at night. Hospital is closed at night. And the nurses are in the acute care area. And there is one aspect of the existing hospital which is actually pretty good. It's the central nurse station, so the nurses that are there at night can keep track of long-term care, they can keep track of the acute care wing, and they can also look down the hallway and keep track of what's going on at the emergency room doors. And that was pushed as something that we really want to keep. So if you look at this, here's the emergency room. That central nurse station is going to be here, keeping track of acute care, keeping track of long-term care, and right there at the emergency department as well. So we maintain that relationship because it's very efficient. And that's an image of what it would look like on the site. You get a sense of the scale of that to the surrounding neighborhood and the fire hall. The second scheme we looked at the North Hawkins site is pretty similar, but we took the clinic and pushed it around to the front. And what it does is it makes a more compact scheme, so there's less building envelope, it's maybe a little bit more efficient in terms of energy usage, but it does have additional internal circulation corridors taking up room. And there's one thing too, there are certain parts of the hospital program that don't need to be in a hospital quality building. The clinic, outpatient services, physical therapy, things like that can be in a type 5 1-hour building. That's code speak, but it's a less expensive building to build. But the hospital functions where the patients are, that needs to be in a higher level construction. So this scheme with the clinic there right in the middle of things is a little bit harder to kind of make that distinction between the building types. Whereas the previous scheme with the clinic here and all these services, you can make a hard line between those building construction types and possibly pursue some savings in your cost. And that's how that building would look on the site. Look, that's the amount of space that building would take up on the site. We have not designed anything yet. We're just looking at massing and square footages. So, the third scheme, downtown. And I will preface this by saying there are a lot of conditions for doing this site downtown. It's a little bit hard to see on the screen, but the existing hospital is essentially right here on this block. And then over this block is where the parking lot is, where the Norwegian History Museum is, and there's several houses there. So this scheme assumes that we'll be able to build on the lot to the east a good deal of the new hospital while the existing hospital is in operation. And then in the second phase, on the other side of this dotted line, we would tear down the existing hospital and then build the remaining portion of the new hospital, which is primarily the clinic and support services. It's a slope site, so as opposed to the other two schemes, which are a single floor, this is a three-story scheme. This is the low end down in this corner here, and I'm going to skip ahead. This is the high end up here. So in this scheme, we would build the long-term care, the acute care, and the emergency department all on that top level. Again, with the ability of the nurses to kind of keep track of everything at night. There would be a connection to a vertical circulation zone here. We would leave the existing hospital in operation. The other big assumption here is that we can vacate the street between these two blocks and incorporate that as part of the new hospital campus. So down in the level below this, this is where we would put the ancillary services, physical therapy, the lab, imaging, the surgery would be down here, dietary, administrative offices, some back of the house, mechanical rooms, and so on. So all of these two floors would be built first. We would move all those departments over into that new facility. We would leave the existing clinic in place, which is right about here, tear down the rest of the hospital, and then go in and build our new clinic facility here. And then that would all be built on top of support services, loading dock, and some additional mechanical electrical space. So it's taking a little longer than the other projects, a little bit more piecemeal. It has more complications, vacating the street, purchasing properties. What do we do with the Norwegian History Museum? Is all part of that. But that's how that would look relative to downtown in terms of mass and its size when it's all done. So, what does all this cost? We've got the three schemes up there, scheme 7A, 7B, which are the Greenfield schemes, and then the downtown scheme. Under each of those, there's a column for the building itself, and then for the site development. And I will say that the number at the top here for each of these, that's based on Seattle pricing. We have really good knowledge of what it costs to build a building, build a hospital building in Seattle. And we have a pretty good idea of what it costs to do site development in Seattle. This isn't Seattle. So we have to make some adjustments. This first line item here is the location factor, 25%. That's right off the top for building in Petersburg rather than Seattle. That's the barging, that's the cost of materials here, the labor, everything else. It's just a factor you have to build in. I worked on the Ketchikan Hospital Edition. When we were estimating that project, we used a 30% adjustment factor. And it turned out we were pretty close, except for mechanical, electrical, plumbing. I'll get to that in a second. Actually, both of those schemes were shown on the Hagen North site, is what we looked at.
Hagen North?
Yeah. We didn't want to try to complicate the analysis by looking at different sites and how they might affect this. We want to have a solid feeling for how one scheme compared to another one on the same site, so we could get a good feeling for what the difference is just for the scheme itself. General conditions, 7.5%, that's for the general contractor. That's pretty typical everywhere. That's just for the cost of doing business when you're building something on site, all your job storage, organization management, all of that. So we didn't really put a premium on that for Petersburg. Design contingency. As I said, we haven't designed anything yet. All we've done is figured out how big it needs to be, where it might go, and what the massing would be. Based on that, we can make some pretty good high-level estimates of what the building's going to cost. We put together narratives for all the different systems, you know, all the architectural materials, the mechanical systems, the electrical infrastructure, and so on, and gave that to our cost estimator as a basis to do this. But we haven't designed anything, so it's pretty typical to have a design contingency early on in the process. Usually, when we do estimating, I start with a 12% early design, go to like a 10% at schematic design, drop to 5 or 6% at design development, and then pretty close to 2 to 1% when we finish the construction documents. The more you know as you go along, the less contingency you really need to build in to cover the things that you don't know yet. So the 8% here is fairly modest. But we have a design contingency for the site of 15%. And I think you all know why. We did our best homework on dealing with Muskeg. We talked to a geotechnical engineer in Alaska who deals with the Muskeg quite a bit. He gave us some tips on how that might be managed. But the depth of the Muskeg is going to vary from site to site. The hydrology of the groundwater moving through the site is going to vary from site to site. We haven't done any detailed site investigation yet. So we're carrying this high contingency right now until we have a better idea of what that particular site is that's selected and what the nature of the Muskeg and the groundwater and so on is. MEP, market contingency. I mentioned before that we're pretty close with the 32% bump for Ketchikan, except for mechanical, electrical, and plumbing. We got surprised when the project was bid out by the mechanical, electrical, and plumbing, because there's a captive market in Ketchikan. There's some trades there that live in Ketchikan. They pretty much do all the work in Ketchikan, and they know exactly what they can price against the competition. Here, we don't have that, really. We don't have full-time mechanical, electrical, plumbing firms in town that can capture that market. We're going to see some more competition from Juneau, from Anchorage, and from Ketchikan when the sprung goes out to bid. But we still, at this point, want to carry some adjustment factor above and beyond everything else for the MEP cost. Contractors overhead profit, that again is pretty typical for the industry, 7.5%. The escalation, all of these costs are based on today's dollars, but we have a period of time where we have to go through design and get out before we actually turn a shovel on site. So this is an escalation factor from today out to the NTP, which is the notice to proceed estimated date. And then finally, the per diem cost. Again, a lot of the labor is going to have to come in from outside. They're going to have to be housed here. The contractor's going to have to pay them a per diem rate. That's another adjustment for doing work in Petersburg. So when you add all that up, you jump up fairly significantly from $31 million to $55 million for the building, $5 million to $10 million for the site, for a total overall for the project, what we expect the bill from the contractor to be for that particular option. So 66 for 7A, 69 for 7B, and then 78 for the downtown site. Again, because it's phased, it's kind of piecemeal, it ends up being a little bit larger than the other schemes, which drives the cost up. So big numbers. Down at the bottom, I've added in indirect costs. And this is a conversation I always need to have with my clients, because when they talk about project costs, what people usually think is what the contractor bids. But that's not quite the case. There are a lot of things that are not associated with construction that ends up being a cost to the project. And I've named a number of them here. Site surveys, geotechnical investigation, design fees, plan review, permitting, inspections, financing costs, moving expenses, and a big one is furniture, fixtures, and equipment. That's a huge number in hospitals. Imaging equipment's not cheap. None of the equipment is really cheap in a hospital. So for hospital projects, that sort of indirect cost can range from 30% to 50% of the overall project. There's a lot of variables that go into that. Site acquisition costs would be in that category. The greenfield sites, those are borough properties. I'm assuming that they're very reasonable cost to us for those sites. The downtown site, there's private property there. That would be part of the challenge, is getting control of that block would be also increasing the indirect costs. So, with that, questions?
Before we open it up to questions, I want to remind everybody that there are index cards on the table. If you're not comfortable asking a question or you just want to share your comments but not with everybody, you can write them down on the back of your survey or on the index card and turn it in at the back of the room, and we're going to take those questions and reply to them on a forum online somewhere. So if you have things you want to ask but you don't want to ask it now, and if you have friends, family members who want to share, please encourage them to go online, email us, call us. Let us know what your comments and your questions, and we're going to try to answer everything we can. So I'm going to switch your mics. So Dan, and if anybody has a question, I can give you the mic or a comment. My name is Devin Johnson. I am the project manager for the hospital. So I live here. I moved here from Milwaukee, in August. So I'm in-house, and I'm one of your new residents.
Thank you. You can probably hear my voice.
Yeah.
The parking on the last option, I didn't see any parking available. Is that correct?
So we have some parking developed on the north side and some parking developed on the south side. But it's clearly not as much as we would be able to get on a greenfield site with more flexibility in terms of laying that parking out.
So you gave an example of the room size for the acute rooms. What is the room size in long-term care, and how does that compare to what we currently have?
We use the same size for the long-term care, but you configure a little bit differently, the 350 square feet. I believe the existing rooms now are about 280. So we are increasing the size. We're also going, I think, all private, except for one shared room in long-term care is the plan right now. If there's a married couple who wants to share a room, that room would be a little bit larger too.
I just have a comment that I was pleased to see physical therapy getting a larger space. It's impossible then right now.
We got that message and we went and looked through the space. There's a lot of benefit to physical therapy. It's all part of the plan to bring better, more coordinated services to people. So it was definitely an apartment that deserved to be expanded and given the types of spaces that best affect the services.
Yeah, I have a question.
Yes, sir.
Does this include what happens with the existing facility? Does that include anything that costing?
So, in the two greenfield sites, we did include money in there for demolishing the existing hospital and doing some modest reconditioning of the site. So basically it wouldn't be an eyesore. So I think there's over $1 million in both of the greenfield sites just to tear down the old hospital building and landscape the existing site there.
Jessica.
there. Okay, so I'm kind of a visual person.
Here you are.
And I'm wondering if you could go back to the North and South Haugen pictures and give us some landmarks to kind of get my head wrapped around where that area is. Like, I see the ball field.
So here's the fire hall.
That's the fire hall, okay.
Yeah. And I believe this is...
It's OPIA, okay. Yeah. So that North Haugen, isn't that pretty deep ravine in there? I mean...
Actually, it's a little bit higher in elevation than the South Haugen side. If you drive up the road and look to the right, you're actually looking down into a depression on the South Haugen side. The North Haugen site is below the road, but it's not quite as deep below the road. But, you know, both of them are full of that muskeg, so development at either site would be about, we're assuming it would be about the same, but, you know, there could be very big differences between the two once the geotechnical information comes in. I will say that the utilities along the road run along the south side. So that would be an easier hookup in terms of the infrastructure. North Haugen site would have to cross the road, which is done all the time, but it's just a little bit more expensive to do that.
And didn't you say that you used Haugen just because of the utilities versus moving into North 8 and Excel streets? The contemplating utilities there is just going to drive the cost.
Right, we have the utilities, actually, excuse me. We have the utilities along Haugen Drive to serve both north and south. In fact, there's additional utilities, water, and I believe sewer on this lot edge. The utilities for Excel Street, I think, are back here somewhere. And for North 8th, I believe they're back here. But they're away from the boundary of the site, so you have to go and develop a new main line. And also, I would say with the North 8th site and Excel Street, you also have to develop roads to get the access to the buildings, so that's another expense.
My name is Elizabeth Hart. I have one question.
Sure.
And one comment. Is there going to be an outdoor living recreation area within the long-term care plan? That's my question.
Yes. So the 7A Haugen, oops, keep mistaking my pointer for my advance. This is intended to be my garden area, outdoor area, to serve the long-term care wing in this scheme. Same thing here. Similar layout, and then on this scheme we have this area here, which is kind of an enclosed courtyard that would be for the long-term care unit.
And then my comment is, I understand that the new building, if it goes downtown, will be two stories.
Actually, three.
And what input do the neighbors having that, are we going to take a vote as a community, or how is the decision going to be made with the neighborhood's input?
I think with the borough, there's probably going to be a very defined process. They do have a mechanism for large new development to engage with the public and have public comment come in. The details of that process, I'm not sure, but we're assuming there's going to be a very public process in the site selection so that all of the concerns, comments are raised and addressed and all play into the final decision for a site selection.
I would just like it taken into account that the downtown site is in the middle of the most historic neighborhood in Petersburg, and it would greatly change the dynamic there.
That's a very good point.
Have you looked at the traffic flow on the greenfield sites that you explored on the water?
No, we have not engaged a traffic engineer to look into that in detail. We assumed that the Hog and Drive would be actually a good thing to serve the site because everybody can get to it. It's a main road central to the entire community. The other sites would probably entail having to drive through residential areas to get to the site, which again would be an impact on the community, the people that live along that road. So I think, as a general sense, as a planner, I would tend to want to put the site closer to a main road.
I envision with that location, you'd have to have a third lane, like a left turn lane. Yes.
So I would assume there'd have to be a widening of the road to accommodate traffic.
There may be, and again, you know, once we move forward, if we're looking at those sites seriously, we get a traffic engineer involved so they could do a traffic count, a traffic study based on traffic engineering standards to figure out whether or not a center left turn lane would make sense for the site.
And has there been any conversation with the borough about a land contribution to this project?
No, not from me.
Yeah, there's a number of questions, I think, you know, where we, a couple of comments on this, so in not deflect the question a little bit, but those are all things that we want to consider. One thing I want to mention is, you know, this is a sticker shock, right? I mean, it's a lot of money. What you're seeing and what you're hearing is the reality of a facility. So this is turnkey, though. So we're not putting up just construction costs or project costs or, you know, telling you it's one thing. And we're looking at a facility. What does it cost to actually, you know, basically open a door and turnkey? And that's what you're seeing today. You know, so the real question is, to me, is, you know, I'm working with the city. We're collaboratively working on opportunities. As we get to the level where there's, where is that in kind? You know, there's a lot of support there. But you know, at that right time is the time when you choose a site is the right time to really look at that. Is that conversation happening? Yeah, in the, you know, behind the scenes when we're asking that, but in a formal setting we will have to do that at the right time. When we look at funding, you know, to me it's about how are we going to pay for something like this? So the question of, can we do this on our own? Can we do it even in the bond? No, we cannot. We have to have an alternative way to look at it. And it's going to be difficult to be able to do that. But in order to go to a funder, we have to have a master plan, because that's the first question that they ask. And in order for us to even approach anyone, you know, that's the first thing that they will ask is a master plan. They also will want to know which site, you know, where it is. So they also want to know if they have community support for a project such as this. So those are the things that we really want to address today and talk about today. The questions on opportunities for in-kind, opportunities for where the location is, we will absolutely have that. This is the first of many conversations. What I really want is community engagement. I want to know what services you want. I want to know, you know, what the building would look like. I want to know where we can build it. And I will do my best to get that funding, because you know, this right here is reality. And guess what? The funding will only increase, or the cost will only increase over time. So that's not going to get any lower over time. You know, and we do have a fixed life on the facility. There's just no question about that. So to answer your question, I deflected it a little bit, but we do have to answer some questions here. So I hope that in some of this conversation, we can bring that to the table, and we can answer some of those questions. And I also want you to go back to your friends and your neighbors, and to bring that feedback as well. So, those are some of the comments. So, yeah, you guys, a question about.
I'll pass it back.
Hello, my name is Felicity. It's my understanding that for a non-profit hospital that we have some sponsorship from the community and maybe some money that comes up from the state. If we have to fundraise to build or repair our hospital, are you considering the hospital becoming privatized? Or will it still remain sort of public and community nonprofit? Or is that not something that can be addressed at this point? It's too early to tell.
That hasn't been part of my mandate in terms of looking into this. I'm not sure, Phil, if you have any insight to that.
So was the question, would it be privatized? I have no plans for that. I mean, obviously, that's something that we would, I mean, that's, it would be nice if we kept it as a community hospital. I mean, it's my feeling on it. You know, again, when we look at funding opportunities, everything has to be considered, but it sure would be nice to have a community hospital. We're sort of a rare breed, you know, when it comes down to organizations. A lot of places are affiliated with bigger organizations. A lot of places have other kinds of subsidies to be able to do that. Historically speaking, PMC has operated fairly independently. We're a component of the borough, we're part of the community, but there's no additional funding around for that. So I think my opinion is to advocate as a community hospital. There's a lot of benefit in that.
This is Tom. I have a comment and a question, I guess, maybe. I think everybody here in this room and in the community really wants to see a successful healthcare facility continue in this community. It's very important. We lose the Coast Guard, the school district, and other things if our facility failed. Because I don't think we'd be hiring and retaining many people in this town if we didn't have a facility. So a question I've got, which I think we all are in agreement too, is that we're an aging community. And I think the plan is to go from 14 beds to 20 for long-term care, which I think is a good move. So I question, why would the plan go to a three-story building if we're all getting older?
That is a great question. And we actually looked at doing multi-story schemes for the Greenfield sites. Again, because of the Muskeg, if we could do a two-story building, it would be a more compact building footprint, we might save some money on site costs. But there was a real preference expressed to make it a single story building, I think for that very reason, just for the convenience of people not having to go up and down different levels. The downtown site is three levels for two reasons. One, because the site is sloping. So at different points around the perimeter of the site, you're going to be entering at a different elevation. And two, because it's a lot smaller than the other Greenfield sites. And you have to pack a lot more program into that small site and stack it on top of one another just to make it work at that site. Just the thought you said.
It's just for your quick question in terms of Wrangell's going through this process of building hospital. It seems like there's a lot of perhaps wisdom to be gained by what their experience was in terms of the community response to that, how that funding source went, and I realize that there are some other players in that. But I just wondered if that might not be another place to really have a reality check about construction costs and equipment and community process in support of that.
Yeah, Chad sent me the article from the local paper there about the addition, and they threw out a number of $30 million for a 45,000 square foot facility. But we're still trying to determine, is that the construction cost, or is that the overall commercial cost, or we don't know. You know, obviously, we want to look at neighboring towns for their experience to do a reality check. And if they have a magic wand to be able to do something cheaper, less expensively, we'd certainly want to take advantage of that. I will add to that, going back to what our assumptions were for this facility and our sort of scope of work descriptions for all the different aspects. We did not assume a cheap building for this. We made assumptions that we're going to use durable materials for the envelope. So this building lasts well into the future and does not leak, does not decay, and becomes a long-lasting asset to the community. So some of the mistakes of the past, like trying to use stucco and marine environments, we're not going to make those same mistakes. And I think if we're going forward, if we need to really take a hard look at the numbers. I would not recommend cheapening up the building. I would recommend taking a hard look at program and making the building smaller as a way to meet available funds.
Two questions. If you can define what you mean by long lasting, because I used to think 30 years was a long time, and that's like in a blink of an eye. So by long lasting, how many years?
So it's kind of a gray area, but I'm assuming it's going to be a 50-year building. Now, that's the building itself. Systems tend to have a shorter lifespan. Your mechanical systems and so on, they have operating parts that wear out. So they tend to be 20 to 30 year systems before they need to be replaced. In reality, they tend to go 40 or 50 and could fall completely apart before something's done about it. But yeah, we want to build a building that's going to last at least 50 years. And when you do that, they tend to last a lot longer. But again, it's a trade-off of what you're willing to spend. I was the project manager for the Gates Law Library at the University of Washington. When you do buildings at the University of Washington, you build 100-year buildings. But you pay for that.
Okay, and then part two, on available sites, I absolutely appreciate that none of those adjacent property owners wanted in their backyard, not one of them, and I can understand why. Is there no land available on the turn there on Howden Drive where there aren't dwellings?
You mean up here?
Yeah. No, if you keep going and you turn past the airport, is that
airport,
area
airport
where there's
here.
Nothing but the pet shelter?
There may be, but these are the sites that were given to us by the borough to consider when we were engaged to do the master plan. I would love to find a vacant downtown site, but I don't think there is one. It can be looked at in the future as you go down the line. There may be other sites available that can be made available that are further away from residential areas. It's something to put into your comments.
So I had kind of two questions. Is I noticed a hospital, a medical center is doing a survey on adult daycare, and I was wondering if one of the ways you envisioned it was having as part of the medical facility there, and if so, how is that incorporated in this design? The second part is in terms of a long-term care Park specifically, but the hospital overall, I would like to see one community type room that's definitely accessible to long-term care, but to other patients and other people, that has light coming in from two sides, like the east and the south, or the west and the south. And as a person that lives right next to the North Hagen site, the magic of the sun and the warmth, you know, is just so important. The second thing is, I understand the desire to have it as a one-story site. I believe the North Hagen site has quite a bit of a hill going up it, and maybe this is a dream thing, and maybe we don't design it now, and maybe design it sometime, but, you know, when you put a second floor on a building and you get higher, the quality of light and the view from a distance, assuming the trees don't grow too much, is really magical. If you go into the city council or borough office, and you look at where you can look out by the entrance and the, you know, main desk there, and how you can look out those nice windows to the north, and the quality of the experience you have there versus being on the first floor is very different. So I would like that magic of having good light in a certain area that really enhances the quality of all users. Thank you.
Bless you. You are warming my heart. As an architect, you know, access to daylight, access to views of nature, all of that is so primary to healthcare. And whenever we design our projects, we are always chasing that.
I'll just yell, because this scares me. But would you mind just putting a slide back that shows the current facility, what is in the current facility compared to the new? I'd like to get a picture. Thank you.
If you would go back to the place where you were showing the different spots that the hospital could be built over by Hagen. Okay, I live right, it would be a spit's throw from my house on the north side.
Where?
How far up does that go? Going north.
There's an implied. Excuse me, there's an implied street line coming out of town that we would be on south of that. And the area is platted right now, according to the borough, for another street alignment here. So we'd be on the other side of those street alignments. So if you are right across the street, we'd be across the street.
Yeah, my house would be the one right on the end there. Down.
To the left.
And then down.
A little bit more. Yeah, right there.
That's
right there. Right there,
that's your house. And I'm wondering, how many feet is it up to the edge of that piece of property on the corner there?
So that's a detail that we still need to work out, but looking at this diagram, if I recall, I think you're probably right about here. So this would be the street alignment that would be developed there, and we have about 20 feet of setback for these wings, or excuse me, this wing from the street, and this is probably more like 60 feet.
And just to remind everybody, we have a master planning link on our website, pncak.org, and all of this information will be posted. So if you want to reference back to it tonight, tomorrow, it's all going to be online, along with any questions you write down. So.
Okay, from the corner up, how many feet is that? Because McDonald's have a house. Right, but I can see the roof from my house. Is that going to be
I was just trying to read the scale graph at the bottom here. I think those are, excuse me.
It might be easier.
Like 20 foot, but. In reality, these are block diagrams that do a general arrangement of the departments on the site. If the project moves forward, there's going to be a lot of community engagement, and setbacks of the building will be part of that discussion. There will be minimum setbacks prescribed by the borough, but of course, community input is going to be important in that too for the final configuration of the building. So it's not set in stone.
Well, how about a stone fence then? It goes along the property line.
Question was to the east of the fire hall on that same side, is that airport reserve or is that sort of sacred ground or something?
State. Anybody here from the borough?
Okay, might be airport reserve. I just didn't know if the state was involved and what that involved that way. So it's less gully, there's less gully there, more flat, and I know that when they put in the fire hall, that was quite reasonable.
I have a question. Has there been any studies about the effect of a town and a community when removing such a big organization out of town walking distance facility or area?
I can't think of one, but it certainly has been a topic that's been part of the conversation on this project. I think there was a lot of trepidation about moving the hospital out of town. But as far as a study, no, I haven't looked at that. I can't think of a similar facility I can relate to the teleferable about it. I don't want to cut off the conversation, but I'm sure people want to get home, so.
I have another question.
Phil, I know we're all, you know, we're looking at the bottom lines of these things. Could you just maybe speak a little bit about your experience with Nome, and then what's going on with Bethel too? And I understand they're kind of regional hubs, which is a little bit different than our situation, but
yeah.
I think people would be, it would be good knowledge for people to have.
Yeah, lots of experiences. Which experience would you like to expand on? Costing is a big one. You know, I remember a lot of these things that presented here occurred over a period of 10 or more years in Nome. So site preparation was really important and instrumental in obtaining the funding. So site preparation was in the order of roughly around $10 million, if I remember correctly. And really what that allowed to happen, and I remember this, And I wasn't in administration at the time, but I remember this. In one of the reasons we got there was a state funding, and Barrow, I think, was at the table, and Nome was at the table, and we didn't at the time, Nome Sound didn't get the funding because they weren't ready, and Barrow was ahead, and so they were able to get this Barrow to secure state funding. So the learning lesson for that was really to have your ducks in a row. Have site prep, have yourself ready so when and if the opportunity presents, then you're in line to get it. North Sound was extremely fortunate. They, with the Recovery Act that occurred in 2008 with the Obama administration, basically there, because of that site prep, and I talked to the Denali Commission about this as well, You know, because of that site prep, they were first in line to obtain that funding. And there were only a couple of facilities in the Indian Health Service that were able to receive that. So it's, to me, it's very important to have a plan. It's very important to have a plan. Because if and when we are available to have funding, whether it's, you know, is the state ever going to open up an opportunity? You know, I don't know. You know, is it going to be a federal opportunity? Is it going to be a USDA, our rural plan? Is it going to be the Department of for economic advantage, or you know, what is it, DA, Department of Health and Human Services? Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know. That's where the homework comes in. What I do know is that if we don't choose, we don't prep the site, if we don't have a master plan, we won't be eligible. We'll be passed over for any opportunity. So really, that's been the goal since I've been started. You know, I can't predict where that funding comes from, but that's probably my biggest experience with that project and being a part of that project. And again, for those who don't know, I was a part of that project as an audiologist, as a staff member, as a manager, and then as a transition, I was part of the transition team clinically, and then I moved into administration, and then we helped move the facility. So there was a lot of hard experiences with that, and one of the reasons I wanted to come here is that, you know, if I ever had the opportunity to do it over again, I would love to be able to have that opportunity, because there was a lot of lessons learned in that process. But the site prep, you know, that's, I think, probably the number one takeaway on anything is figuring out where you want to build, having a plan to be able to build it, and then when the funding comes available, really chase it. And it could be piecemeal, it could be patchwork, it could be phased. There are all different ways to approach it, but we can't do anything without a master plan. Does that answer that question?
So just to play devil's advocate a little bit, what you just said sounds
like the probability of getting funding for an entire project is probably much lower than being able to piecemeal it. Am I paraphrasing that correctly?
I don't have a good answer for that. I don't know what's available. Funding's tight wherever you look.
And yeah. So my point is, part of the reason, not just cost, but part of the reason that we are backing away from the downtown is that you couldn't do it all at once. It had to be phased. And yet what you are saying is it's likely that the project will be phased and probably would have increased costs no matter where the location will be.
Potentially, I think that when I mean phased, if you look at the Office of Rural Health, they have a playbook basically for a critical access hospital. Every project is phased, and I guess what I mean is trying to chase funding for each of the different phases without a significant gap in each of those phases. So that's what I guess that's what I mean. I don't necessarily mean construction phasing. I mean design, geotechnical work, getting the site ready, that's a phase. And actually putting a building on site, it'd be nice to be able to do it in one shot if we can. I mean, it's hard to bring a whole construction team in, leave, and then come back. And you know, those are additional costs. So I guess what I mean for that, and the FF&E, which is the furniture, fixtures, and equipment, that's a major component of procurement and developing some of those and bringing that in. That's a big portion of your project. So and that's a little bit down the line, but those all play into that phased approach that I'm talking about. Any other questions? Great. I really appreciate everyone coming out. This is both exciting and daunting at the same time. And I really want to express how hard I want to make this happen for the community without affecting the taxpayer. I really do. I mean, this is something that is a big enough project. I'm vested in the community. I really want to make this happen in a productive and meaningful way for the community. It's extremely important. Healthcare is so important to the community. Being able to build out those services is important to me. So with those parting thoughts, please fill out your form and provide that feedback And even if you disagree with the price tag, please indicate your support for a facility, for a healthcare facility, and I'll figure out some way to get some funds. Dan?
All right. Great questions.
Anything else? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right.